Yeah, and we're coming to you from the Golden 1 Center once again, where tonight the Kings get ready to take on the pesky Washington Wizards. And Drapes, I could be imagining this, but I don't think I am. This place still a little bit, still kind of vibrating with the energy of what went down here Saturday night.
Yeah, this is like, you know, should be on the Smithsonian list, like a protected venue or something. Like, on this date, you know, 25 years ago, Keegan Murray went off for 40. Like, seriously, there needs to be a plaque.
And a historic monument. Site.
It's historic site, exactly. National Registry of Historic Places, because what we saw Saturday night was truly historic from young Keegan
Murray. Yeah, and just that third quarter, right? Did you know, when did you first get the sense that, all right, something really special is brewing tonight?
Not until the third quarter.
Yeah.
You know, he had 13 in the second, 19 in the first half, and I'm like, oh, he's having a pretty good game. Then all of a sudden, I went downstairs, went and grabbed a cookie, came back out, looked back up. He's got 35? Like, it was just like, I missed like three or four threes in a row, you know, and because I went downstairs. And then I came back out, and he had 35, and it's still like 6 minutes to go in the third quarter. And he had 45 at the end of three. And I'm like, this dude can easily get 50 points, you know. And then Mike Brown took him out and all that. But, you know, that third quarter, about midway through, it was like, wow, we're witnessing something. He's on one. And it was great to see, man.
Yeah. Now, you have the call tonight, right?
Yes.
You got the call tonight. Mark Jones had the call Saturday. Mark Jones going to join us here about 2:15 with his views and reactions to what went down. But it was incredible to see Keegan get going on that roll. And I thought it was interesting. Did you happen to hear when Steph Curry, they had their game finished earlier than the Kings. Did you hear when Steph Curry was asked about it, if he heard what Keegan was doing? He's like, he did what?
Yeah. Because we ran it on the post game as well. And I didn't think it was live. Like, I'm like, there's no way he could react. Like, because our game was still going on when he was being asked about it.
They started really early.
Yeah, they started early. And I'm like, no, that can't be from tonight. And sure enough, somebody asked Steph about Keegan Murray. And the fact that Keegan was 12 of 13 from three going into the fourth, still plenty of time left and everything. And to hear Steph, it was funny, though. Did you hear when Steph said, oh, Klay Thompson, you know, theoretically had 18. Same thing with Keegan. Like, if Mike Brown didn't take him out, Keegan could have 15 or 16 threes the other night.
Yeah, but clearly Steph was worried because he almost was interrupting the question with, what's he got now? Are they still playing?
Right.
Where is he now?
He wanted to follow the play-by-play,
right? I got to go watch.
Right.
Yeah. I got to go watch. So just an amazing night, obviously, on Saturday night. What do you think that means for the Kings to have that big night from Keegan Murray? We've been waiting and waiting and waiting for a big night from Keegan. Had no idea it was going to be a night that big.
I think it means a couple of things. In the short term, it means we've been finally waiting for Keegan to get going. He's that third piece we've been waiting all season long for. We talked about it during the offseason, during summer league, everything, during training camp. And it finally arrived. And I'm hoping this sort of breaks him out of, you know, whatever offensive slump, whatever you want to call it. Now he becomes that guy, especially when De'Aaron Fox comes back. He still needs to be that aggressive. Secondly, does this change your mind regarding the trade deadline? You know, I know it's just one game, but does it make you think that, you know what, maybe we don't need to go out there and make any kind of big moves? Maybe that number three, big three that we talked about, we still have it in-house with Keegan Murray.
Yeah, I saw something somewhere that said Murray's big night silences trade rumors. And I was like, no, that there were no rumors that the Kings were thinking of trading Keegan Murray. Okay, it was reported that if Toronto was going to talk with the Kings, they probably would ask for Keegan. Okay, fine. They weren't going to get him. I just thought that was a little misleading. It suggested that, are they going to trade Keegan? Well, not after last night. They weren't going to trade him before that, and they're certainly not going to trade him now.
Well, I think what lended credence to that, lended some belief into that, is that you got noted writers, respected writers, James Hamm and Jason Anderson, actually talking to the organization. Hey, this is what's being floated around out there. Is there any truth to it? And then once those guys reported, the Kings have no intention of trading Keegan Murray and I think that sort of silenced some of that. But you know how it is in today's game, man. It's all about social media. You know, I hate, being on Twitter sometimes because we got these social media GMs and all these trade scenarios, and I wouldn't trade Keegan, but maybe I would for this and that and that. Everybody just needs to be quiet.
Yeah.
We just need to shut up and let Monty McNair and the people inside and the know do their jobs.
Mm-hmm. We want to thank Kyle Draper because he arranged for us today to chat with Kenyon Murray, Keegan's dad. So thank you for setting that up. Looking forward to that.
I'm excited about that, and I'll tell you, Whitey and the people on social media. I know a lot of you guys follow Kenyon Murray. Today's his 50th birthday. So he's taking a break on his 50th birthday to have a chat with us. But no better way to celebrate it, right, than to talk about your son having that historic night. So I'm interested in getting his take on Keegan's big night.
He was a good ball player in his own right.
He was, right? Yeah. Yes, he was. Started at Iowa, played overseas as well. And, he still looks like, I texted him, I said, you still could get about 12 to 15 points a night the way you look. I mean, he looks in great shape. Yeah, so I'm excited to have him.
Well, let's just hope that the Wizards decide to sit back in a zone like what Utah decided to do for much of that game.
Ooh, unbelievable, right?
Boom, boom, boom. Hey, these are called zone busters.
Right. And they didn't get out of it. But that's the same thing we saw opening night.
Yeah.
Remember, in Utah.
Yeah.
It was like, are they trying to lose or are they just, sometimes during games when you're up a lot, you just like to work on some things, but they weren't up. Like I just didn't understand it. And, if Washington comes in that same way, remember second night of a back to back, hopefully, we'll see Keegan continue that hot streak.
Yeah. One good thing about the Kings so far this year, I know they've had their share of games on the road where they've gotten flattened, but they seem immune to that stinker at home against a bad team. It's the NBA. Yes. Anything could happen. But my point is, you got to be very confident about their chances tonight, even though, as you know, it was almost a year ago exactly that the Wizards did march in here and kind of spoiled the Kings' Christmas a little bit.
Yeah, but at 9-3, and to your point, this is a much different Kings team in terms of protecting home court. I mean, their only home loss is Golden State, the Clippers, and that Pelicans loss.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, the teams they're supposed to beat here at home, they've been able to do that. And and to do it without De'Aaron Fox the other night was extremely huge. I thought that their approach mentally and then once they took the floor and handled their business was huge. Same thing tonight, though. I know you got Boston lurking on the horizon on Wednesday, but I expect the Kings to come in focused, protect home court. One thing I'm seeing this season when it comes to Sacramento, these Kings, they do play with a little more edge to them. Sure, sometimes against Houston, the Pelicans, we're like, man, we need some dogs. But I do see a little toughness, a little chip on their shoulder, whether it's from Malik Monk, even a little bit Keegan Murray, obviously JaVale McGee, De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, I thought was huge the other night in the way he set the tone. And so I do see a more focused, determined, energetic Kings team here at home.
That's one of the most interesting things to me about the piece that Sam Amick wrote today in The Athletic. He suggested that, and this is just his reporting is spot on. He knows what he's talking about, very well connected. He suggested that inside the organization, there's more satisfaction with the defense than there used to be. And now maybe the focus, as they look to potentially add, will be more on offense than on defense. And that just floored
Surprised
me.
You, right?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? I think it's two reasons. One, the emergence of Keegan defensively. And two, I think Keon Ellis has given them a big boost in the backcourt defensively as well. And so, sure, I think if we can get an OG Anunoby or somebody like that, a 3-and-D guy, great. But I don't know if the emphasis and focus is on getting necessarily a lockdown defender. Because think about this too, Whitey. If you do go out there and get that defender, you're going to have to give up one of your offensive guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so your offense is going to suffer then. And so that is a little surprising, but I see the logic behind it because I'm seeing the effort out there defensively. I'm seeing them try to be, more physical. Sometimes the results aren't there. But the eye test to me seems to show me that the Kings are a better defensive team than necessarily what the numbers indicate.
Yeah.
Like, the defensive rating may not be that much better than it was last season in terms of where you rank, but I think they're an improved defensive team.
I think the numbers, and it's still so early in the year that they tend to fluctuate, from what Sam wrote, I think the defensive rating is right now looking halfway decent. But I agree with you. You watch them play, and yeah, you got to throw out the games where they've just gotten rolled, the games in which they've had no chance to win, second out of back-to-back on the road, blah, blah, blah. But the defense has been better. I mean, they've done a much better job of making the other team feel them. So I'd be surprised if Mike Brown, you know, if you asked him, I'd be surprised if he said, oh, yeah, we're good.
Right.
You know? But we're talking about the whole organization, not just him.
And right now they're 14th in
defense. That's tremendous.
Rating. You'll take that if
yeah.
Mike Brown.
Yeah.
He's talked about, you know, if we're middle of the pack and, you know, we still have an elite offense, we're good. And so I could argue, you know, 14th in defensive rating, but offensive rating is where they're struggling right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see here. 14th in offensive rating. So, you know, this team, you know, maybe could use an offensive boost. Maybe another guy off the bench outside of Malik and Trey that can provide some scoring for them.
Zach LaVine's name's getting thrown around. The extent of it is that Zach LaVine, we know Zach LaVine would not mind coming here. That's the extent of it, right?
Yes.
Doesn't mean that they've talked to him or they've talked to the Bulls. We don't even know if he's available. But Zach LaVine apparently has let it be known that he wouldn't mind playing with De'Aaron Fox.
Who wouldn't, though, right? Like, but that shows you where Sacramento is.
Yeah.
I will say we've seen the Kings go after LaVine before in the past with the offer sheet and then having it matched. And so I think, you know, I love Zach LaVine. I think he'd be a perfect fit. The only thing that scares me is that contract. You know, I think he's, what, $47 million or something like that. He had signed a four-year, $160, $180 million contract.
You want to know his contract?
Yeah.
Do I need
those numbers, really? Do I really want to hear it?
40 this year,
yep.
43 next year, 46
Woo.
The year after that.
Woo.
And then he's got an option at 49, which you know he's going to say,
yeah,
uh-huh,
gotta pick that up.
I want that.
Man, that's tough. That's tough. And I love Zach LaVine as a player. Everybody, you know, wants to poo-poo him. I think in the right system, with the right talent around him, the right coaching staff, which we have here, I think he would fit in well. But, man, that's a lot of money.
That's Mark Jones' money, isn't it? That's Mark Jones, voice of the Kings, joins us when we return to the Goal One Center. Draper and Gleason here, the Drive Guys on Sactown Sports. From the Golden One Center, Gleason and Draper, Drive Guys, getting ready, of course, for the Kings and the Wizards. But we're still basking in the afterglow of what went down Saturday night here. Keegan Murray's 47-point effort in the Kings win over the Jazz. Nice enough to join us. He was on the TV call, the master of play-by-play for the Kings, Mark Jones, with us. Mark, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. What do you think you're going to remember the most about Saturday night here at the Golden One Center?
Man, in the second half, guys, when he stayed on that heater, I'm going to remember just the calm with which he was playing with and, you know, the steady, stoic disposition etched on his countenance, on his face. He didn't show any emotion. And to be on that kind of roll and to not still remain Keegan Murray, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty amazing. And when I think about, you know, I've called Steph Curry's then career high 54 points at Madison Square Garden back in 2014. I called two of James Harden's 50-point triple-doubles when he was with Houston. I've called a couple of 50 balls of LeBron James and 25-point quarters in the playoffs by LeBron. This was right up there with them. I mean, to shoot it with the efficiency that he did, you know, it was a regular season game, but still, that was very, very amazing for a guy who, by the way, on the other end, had a pretty heavy defensive assignment as well. So that's about as complete a game as you'll see a guy play at the offensive and defensive end.
Mark Jones joining us. Mark, it's your boy Drapes. You know, one thing when I look back at what I saw Saturday night from Keegan, you know, like you mentioned, you've seen other players have great nights. But knowing Keegan like we do, his quiet, mild-mannered self, almost kind of, you know, egoless, you know, in terms of the way he approaches the game. He knows he's good. He knows he can get buckets. But to see him black out like that, like he did, he has like a quiet assassin, a silent killer kind of vibe when he's out there on the floor, I feel like.
Yeah, he really does. And it's interesting, you know, guys, you know, if you watch and you really know, like, the Kings don't call a lot of plays for Keegan, right? He's our best shooter, arguably, but they don't call a lot of designated plays for him, per se. You know, if you watch the start of games, watch a beginning of second halves, ATOs, sometimes they'll go to other guys, but Keegan is a guy that always gets it in the flow. And that's what really kind of turned me on about his performance. And obviously, once he's in that kind of flow, then the guys start looking for him, and they became, I think, a little bit more purposeful and intentional about getting him some shots. There had to be, you know, after he had made 7-8 in a row, you know, there had to come a time where, hey, he has to at least get a touch, and it proved to be great decisions. And he didn't pass any up. He didn't pass any up, and Mike wasn't cursing him on the sidelines, right? He didn't pass any shots up, because usually, you know, Kyle, you and I have a great vantage point down there courtside. When he passes up some shots, Mike automatically looks down his bench for somebody to come in for him as a way to scold him. He didn't have to do that a couple nights ago.
Yeah, excuse me, Mark. Mark Jones with us here, Sacktown Sports. You guys correct me if I'm wrong, but when Keegan came out of college, you know, he was seen as a three-level scorer, and he was a very good three-point shooter. But I don't think anybody anticipated he would be this good of a three-point shooter. You know, last year setting the rookie record, this year threatening the single-game record. Is he maybe a better three-point shooter so far in the NBA than people expected he would be at this point?
I think there's no question about it. I mean, during the game a couple of nights ago, I was during commercial, I was checking my phone, and I got two texts from NBA assistant coaches and three texts from players, and one of them a former player, who were out of their mind with what he was doing. So that's the gravity of what he was doing. You have to remember, Keegan took a big leap in his three-point percentage from his junior, senior year to then his first year in the NBA. And, you know, the thing that was glaring, I think, on the scouting report where guys really went wrong with him was one of my buddies that is a scout told me that he was rated in the lower third of quote-unquote top athletes in the draft. Mm-hmm. And, man, were they wrong on that one, because we've seen him slam it on a few guys and slap it on a few guys this year. So, you know, it's scouting is an art form, rarely perfect, right?
You're right about that, Mark Jones. You know, Mark, as great as Keegan is, I love the fact that Mike Brown, as his coach, is asking him to be a two-way player. You know, we know he can score. We saw that last season. But for Mike Brown to say, you know what, I'm going to put you on Steph Curry, I'm going to put you on Donovan Mitchell, I'm going to put you on this person, shows me that Mike Brown is pushing these guys harder than maybe even fans are asking for. Speak to that, if you will.
Yeah, well, that's why when – you know, that's why if you just look at analytics and numbers, they really lie to you. And right now, if you look at the analytics and numbers, it says that the Kings' offense is 14th, their defense is 15th. That doesn't tell the whole story about where this team is. Mike would rather be 14th and 15th in offense and defense than be first in offense and 25th in defensive rating like we were a season ago. Thus, the emphasis on the defensive end for guys like Keegan Murray, and he's a shining example. So is Kevin Huerter, which has gone under the radar. Murray's a great example of some of the physicality that's being required, and it took an early toll on his shooting percentages, but he's now crept up to about 35% after that performance a couple of nights ago. And here's something, too, that you're not going to hear or read a lot of other places. A lot of the credit has to go to assistant coach Dutch Gately. And I had a great conversation with Dutch the other day, and part of arming Keegan for some of these high-end elite defensive assignments that he's getting is teaching him not just to chest up on guys, but how to close out on guys. He was correcting Keegan the other day on using his right hand to close out on a player on the left wing so as to protect the middle, because we're a no-middle team. defend at baseline. Now he's got Keegan using his left hand on right-handed shooters on closeouts, and that's made a big difference, too, in some of the subtlety that he's been able to be successful with defensively. So kudos to assistant coach Dutch Gately, who's done a fantastic job with Keegan, not just at the offensive end, but the defensive end. And, you know, last year this time we were talking about Chris Middleton perhaps being the comp for Keegan. I think you got to raise the ceiling now to the comp being perhaps Paul George.
Yeah. Mark Jones with us here. Drive Guys. Mark, I think if somebody asked me, someone who didn't know this team asked me to give one word that would describe this team, one of the first words that would come to mind for me is unselfish. And I think we saw that in the game. It was remarkable to see, and they're smart players, I understand, but the way people were looking for Keegan in that third quarter, the way his teammates responded, how genuinely happy they were. What did that night say, not only about Keegan, but about the culture of this team?
Man, we saw it in real time last year, how Mike Brown alchemized a franchise that was really lacking in an identity. And that's who we are now in Sacramento. It's a group of selfless, sacrificing players that do it for the greater good. I mean, you look at, listen, last year or any time, you know, De'Aaron Fox could go out and get 40 every game, okay? Domas Sabonis could go out and get 25, 27, and 12 every game. But that's not the way that we play. That's not the way that this is built. When Mike brought his offense here to Sacramento, he made sure that it was going to be a very egalitarian offense. Everybody gets a touch. A lot of passing, a lot of moving. That has become our identity. But now in year two, Mike has subtly evolved the offense to where he's preparing for more playoff success. This year, he's being a little bit more intent on hunting mismatches with Jay Triano, the assistant coach, to take advantage of that, because in the playoffs, the game changes a little bit. And last year, I don't think we were quite ready for that. Experience is a part of it, but the things that Sacramento's doing now offensively will prepare us for down the road, and the selflessness component of it still remains. That's the big benefit.
Mark Jones joining us. Mark was on the call Saturday night. Mark, you know, I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about De'Aaron Fox, because on the pregame show the other day, we had the NBA.com MVP rankings. And we know a lot of people in the league office, a lot of people that cover the league. And De'Aaron wasn't even in the top 10 on NBA.com, their MVP ladder. What's going on, man? What's that like? What does it take for this guy to finally get some acknowledgement out there, some love?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, listen, I've lived on the East Coast for the majority of my life up until the last 4 years now. And, you know, I consider myself a basketball junkie, right? Like, I don't go to bed until 1 a.m. on the East Coast because I stay up and watch all those West Coast games. But, you know, other media types with obligations to get stories in or be on air with something, they may not watch. You know, that's why I think my coworker at ESPN, Richard Jefferson, tried to jam me up and accused me of being a homer earlier this year during one of our Kings games. And I said 2.5 months ago during the preseason game we did a Golden One, said, Richard, this guy will be a top five candidate. That's the way he's tracking. And if people are watching and listening, they'll notice. If they're not watching and listening, it'll be a case like last year where we get to April and people say, wow, this little Sacramento team's really good. You know, reminds you of that Drake album cover that says, if you're reading this, it's too late. And that's kind of the deal. But De'Aaron's game is so dynamic, and it's so spectacular, and he's doing it in the context of winning. I'm not sure why more people aren't noticing. And you consider the fact that he punctuates a lot of Sacramento's wins with clutch performances. It's even more reason for the spotlight to be on him. But, you know, listen, there's an old saying that a lie runs a marathon before the truth gets out of bed, right? So the history of the franchise might be hurting De'Aaron a little bit in that context. But, hey, listen, I know when I get on my Christmas game, I'm going to find a way to talk about De'Aaron Fox during my ESPN broadcast. when I'm calling that Miami Heat Philadelphia game Christmas night at 8 o'clock, and we come out of a promo for the Sacramento Kings, it's going to be on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Mark always giving the squad service. Love nationally. Yeah, I appreciate that, man.
I'm just doing a public service, man. I don't want people to be in the dark. You know, you can bring truth to light sometimes. It needs a little help.
opening some eyes. That's all. Yeah. Thank you, Mark. We appreciate your time very much. Hope to talk to you again soon.
You got it, guys. Go Green.
All right, Mark. All right, man.
Mark Jones had the play-by-play Saturday. Tonight, Kyle Draper with the call for the Kings against the Wizards.
Yeah. And this is a, should we say, trap game? Can I say that?
I guess so.
Coming off Keegan's 47, Boston on Wednesday.
Yeah, by definition, I guess it would be. I hadn't thought of that. I think you're right.
This would be one of those games. If I'm the Kings, fourth quarter rest. Come out early, put your foot on these guys. You know, they're not a good team. What are they? 4-24 or something like that. I don't. So let's get that win tonight.
Yeah. Speaking of trap games, a lot of people thought that yesterday might be a trap game for the 49ers. Well, guess what? Coming up, if these three things happen, Brock Purdy will be the MVP. All right. You ready for
Jalen Hurts gets injured. Dak Prescott doesn't play the last.
Dak is done. Dak is
done.
Cut
his mic, Whitey.
That's next year. Next with the Drive Guys on Sackdown Sports. Yeah, they're still talking out here at the Golden 1 Center about what Keegan Murray did on Saturday, and they will be for a long time. Kyle Draper, they're still talking about what this man to my right, what RJ did in this building last Thursday at halftime downstairs.
What'd you do, RJ?
First man that we know of. I couldn't find anyone else.
Mayonnaise on a hot dog?
Mayonnaise and hot dog, no. One bun, two hot dogs. That's what.
No way.
Yeah.
What, are you cutting down on carbs, RJ?
Efficiency, man.
Okay.
Efficiency.
Double dog dairy with the double hot dog.
Man.
It was impressive.
That's impressive. That's the way to do it, though. Because if you're trying to cut down on the carbs, you know, the bread might be bad for you or something like that.
Look, I didn't get this figure by messing around, all right?
You worked hard to get that figure,
darn
right?
Darn right.
Yeah. It was very impressive. It was just, wow. And I think that kind of in some ways set the tone for what Keegan did. But be that as it may, Scooter 916 among those on the chat here, YouTube chat. They've had enough of your Brock Purdy blasphemy, Kyle. They've had enough.
No, they're not mad at me, right? I didn't even say anything about Brock Purdy yet. We can have that conversation after watching that game yesterday if you want, Mr. Whitey. We can do that. I watched that game just like everybody else.
What's next? Can Purdy win a Super Bowl? Then when he does, then what? Oh, I'm sorry. We just got another text here, and it jumped all over on me. Yeah.
Well,
he does. Well, he has to win multiple. Just stop. He leads the league in all of the important categories. He's deserving. Here's the thing. I really think if these three things happen, he will win the MVP. We can argue about whether
he
should.
Okay, let's hear.
I think if he does these three things or these three things happen, he's the MVP. One, I think the 49ers have to earn the number one seat, which they have the inside track.
Inside
now.
Track, yeah.
Yeah. So if they don't, you know, something bad would happen, and the quarterback's going to get some blame for that. Two, he has to avoid a bad game over the last three, like a stinker. You know, it's like, like what happened to Dak yesterday.
Yeah, or, you know, like a zero touchdown, two or three interception kind of game.
Right,
something like that.
Right.
Okay.
There's no reason to think he will have a bad game, but if he doesn't, and then third, one more game. I got some numbers here, pardon me. If he hits a passer rating over 130 in one more game, that would give him 7 this year, and that would be the most ever. And I was talking about this with Jay last week. I think for Purdy to win the MVP, it would help if he does something statistically that has never been done. And if he has 7 games with a pass rating of 130 or better, he'd be the first guy ever to do that. You do those three things, and it's a done deal. Brock Purdy will be the MVP. I believe that. I know you're a big CMC guy.
And that's what I was going to say. Anybody with their right mind watching that football game yesterday, you cannot argue or discount that CMC is the guy that gets this thing going. He's the thing that holds it all together.
His ability to run hard,
mm-hmm. his ability to catch out of the backfield, his ability to get yards after the catch or yards after contact.
Oh, he's tremendous. No question.
CMC is the best player on that team.
Here's the thing.
Yes or no? Yes or no, what?
Best player on the team.
Offensively. How about that?
Well, he's not the most valuable. I still think Purdy's better than him this year. He is, and I'll tell you why.
You can't be honest with that.
No, you tell me. You answer this question.
Oh,
I did.
All right.
Watching that game, did you notice who played quarterback when Brock Purdy was out for a few plays?
Yes.
All right, so here's my question. Let's say they got a game, the 49ers got a huge game against whomever.
Yep.
Would you rather be in a big game with Brock Purdy and Elijah Mitchell or Sam Darnold and Christian McCaffrey? Give me Brock.
Sam Darnold and Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, Sam Darnold.
Did you see Sam Darnold yesterday?
Yeah.
First of all, George Kittle dropped the pass.
Because he threw it too hard.
Oh, come on.
That's why
he dropped
it. It
hit him in the hands.
I know.
It hit him in the hands.
Wasn't a great touch, Kyle. Wasn't a great touch.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
No touch at all.
We all know CMC. You can argue CMC is the MVP of the team.
Go ahead if you want. Like, yeah. I don't think he is, but you could certainly make that case.
But what they
we may
seen,
have co-MVPs, but they may actually end up being co-MVPs.
They may.
Which we've never had before.
You know, but one thing that we've seen, and this is not to bash Brock Purdy. I'm just saying.
Watch out. He's going to bash Brock Purdy.
I'm just saying CMC, you guys aren't giving him enough credit. You're not giving him enough love. The same way you guys feel like I'm dissing Brock Purdy, you're not giving enough love to CMC. CMC, we've seen in other systems, be a stud. You put Brock Purdy on the Patriots?
Christian McCaffrey's never been this good. He's been good.
He's been
never been this good. Yeah, he's been good.
But now he has some other weapons, too.
Like
and he has a great play caller. You know, I could also argue, watching that game, Kyle Shanahan is the most valuable piece to this whole team. His play call, I mean, it's how many guys are just not even wide open, but just open in that offense. I mean, it's amazing. And Brock Purdy makes some throws.
Didn't happen that way with Jimmy G, though.
But you add CMC.
Good point. What's different? Same play caller, same players, except for the quarterback.
No, now you add CMC. You guys just don't want to go with facts. The games that CMC played with Jimmy G, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception.
Jimmy G was never as good as
Jimmy G's numbers in the games that Brock Purdy, that CMC played with.
Are you trying to tell me? Let me see if I understand.
Yes.
You're saying Brock Purdy and Jimmy G. Jimmy G's like the same. Brock Purdy's no better than Jimmy G. Are you saying Brock Purdy's playing no better than Jimmy G played?
I'm saying if Jimmy G was still on this team with this offense, I wouldn't be surprised if he had great numbers also.
Okay, but are you saying that Jimmy G was as good as Brock Purdy?
In that stretch, yes. In that 9 touchdown, 1 interception stretch, yes. With CMC, the numbers don't lie, Whitey. Look at the research.
What
Whitey,
did you guys, Mark Jones just tell us? He said that's all numbers do is lie. We just spent 5 minutes with him telling us, you know, analytics and the numbers, they lie. He just told us that.
Brock Purdy is playing great. He's playing fantastic. But CMC is the MVP.
He's great. I don't think he's doing MVP, but he's great.
3 down back, running harder than anybody we've seen since, like, Barry Sanders. Like, this dude is amazing, and you guys are not giving him enough credit. Because you're wearing your Brock Purdy underoos and jersey, you're not witnessing what Christian McCaffrey is doing. This is going to be, and Jay, you put it in the text, 2,000-plus all-purpose yards.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is a weapon from on the ground, receiving. Like, when you talk about, we need to get a defensive coordinator. Do we know any defense NFL? Because when you're game planning, you're not game planning number one for Brock Purdy. Trust me. CMC is the guy.
CMC is nothing without Trent Williams. Trent Williams is nothing without Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy is nothing without Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk's nothing without Debo. They all combine to form this incredible offense. The quarterback is the most important player. The quarterback is not just dinking and dunking. Did you see the throw to Debo at the pylon, back shoulder throw?
Oh, yes.
At the pylon.
Yes.
That's like big time
you
stuff.
See,
That's a huge throw.
This is
McCaffrey
what we do
on that play
Brock
had
Purdy.
Nothing to do this with
it. This is what we do with Brock Purdy.
What?
We
point out when he makes a great throw?
We like, you see that one throw? He got to be the MVP because of one throw. I'm looking at the totality of what CMC has brought to this organization. He has single-handedly changed this Niners
franchise.
The difference.
You say that we disrespect CMC, and I don't know who we are. Me. I have said nothing but that Christian McCaffrey is a tremendous player all season long. You compare that to the disrespect you've had for Brock Purdy. You said Brock Purdy's not that good.
I didn't say that. You're putting words. I said last week when we came on here, Brock Purdy is probably the likely MVP. He's playing at a great level right now. But
Then why do you have such a hard time with me saying if he does E3 things?
I didn't say that. No, I said MVP. Yes, he will, because it's a quarterback award. But I can argue he's not even the MVP of his team.
You can argue.
Yeah. I can make that argument. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
You can't argue with the numbers Brock Purdy's putting up. He's putting up tremendous numbers. But take him and throw him on the Patriots. Are they a Super Bowl contender? No. We've seen CMC play elite-level football in a different system on a Carolina Panthers team that was going nowhere.
Are you saying if CMC's on the Patriots, they're a Super Bowl contender?
It's different at quarterbacks. Come on now. Come on. I'm saying CMC is still an elite player. You put Brock on the Patriots, he's not an elite player.
That's some McCaffrey numbers. Now, these are in your favor, okay? I'm just pointing these out to support your argument, because he's been tremendous. He's got 80 touchdowns in 89 games. He's the fifth ever to do that. 80 touchdowns in his first 89 games. And yesterday was McCaffrey's 15th game with a rushing and receiving touchdown. He and Marshall Faulk are the only two guys ever to do that.
I mean, Niner fans, you guys, you're so loyal to Brock Purdy.
Co-MVP's a work.
No, yeah, exactly. But that's the thing. We're so upset about people taking a shot at Brock Purdy that we're not realizing Christian McCaffrey's value to the team. This whole Brock Purdy conversation is taken away from what CMC is doing and what he's done with this franchise.
I think the Brock Purdy conversation is just in response to how many people were so late to realize how good he was. It's two separate things. So now I think the people that are anti-Brock or don't think he's that good, it's like they're running out of room. They're backing up against the edge.
No, and if I'm correct, I've always said Brock Purdy needs to show it to me in the postseason. I said, ultimately, for me, because everybody's like, well, what does he need to do? Does he need to win the Super Bowl? Yeah, probably.
He won last year in the postseason. He showed you last year in the postseason.
One good game, one okay game. Come on, man. I need to see. And unfortunately, he won't have to go on the road probably this year. But once again,
They got a tough game this week.
Come on, man.
The Ravens?
Come on. I know. It's a tough game, but it's at home. It's at Levi. You know, I want to see playoff. Like, one thing I saw, and I know we got to take a quick break, but I want to talk about this at some point. What I saw from Kyler Murray might be a blueprint on how to beat the San Francisco 49ers. You need a mobile quarterback.
Well, there you go. And who do they play this week?
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
How the 49ers could face their toughest test this week. That's coming up. Also, a look at the numbers that explain why you are getting really tired of this particular player. When the Drive guys come back to the Golden One on Sackdowns, comes to us from CK916. Thank you, CK916. Says, Whitey, there have been co-MVPs. Manning and McNair were co-MVPs 2003, which is absolutely correct.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Maybe we'll end up with that this year with Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey. That would be the first time teammates had shared MVP honors. Could happen.
And would anybody be upset about that? Or it'd be like, no, it should have been Brock by himself. I think
you would be upset.
I think if it's co-MVPs, you know what? I get it, because it's a quarterback award. It is, you know? And when you look at the quarterback position this season, there's nobody playing it like Brock. There's nobody playing it on that level. You could throw Lamar in there. I'd probably throw Lamar, maybe not stat-wise. His stats don't, but his importance, take Lamar Jackson off the Ravens.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're not a playoff team. And so, maybe it is co-MVPs this year.
Maybe. But like I said, I think for Brock to win it, they've got to finish with the top seed, and they may need to beat.
Who's his biggest comp? Is it Lamar? I think Dak's sort of out of it. Yeah, especially because the Cowboys have struggled on the road. You know, what they got? 8 home wins, I think. 8 of their 10 have come at home, something like that. And in a big game like that against Buffalo to look that bad. And so I think it's a 3-person race right now between CMC, Brock Purdy, and Lamar Jackson.
Here's one, CBS Sports. Brock Purdy minus 225 MVP odds. Dak plus 500. Lamar Jackson plus 500. Christian McCaffrey plus 1,000. So
Brock is the overwhelming favorite.
Right now, I think he is.
Right.
Whether he should be or not. But they probably are going to have to win this week. And who knows? Maybe they get a the 49ers get a big boost from the Seahawks tonight, right? Yeah. Let's go, Hawks.
This is a big game. This is a big game. This is a must-win for Philly.
It is.
This is a must-win. First of all, because we talked about it, you win this, you're tops in the division.
Yes.
You're the number two seed now.
With the Giants and Cardinals coming.
Yes. Your last three games, Giants, Cardinals, Giants.
Yep.
So you're in a great position. You got to win tonight.
No question about that. No question about that. But as far as the Ravens go, the Ravens have run for more than 100 yards in every game. Okay? Yesterday they ran for, or last night, 251. And yesterday the 49ers a little banged up on the interior of their defense. They gave up 234 yards rushing to Arizona. Mm. So I know that the Ravens lost another running back yesterday. But that's got to make you a little nervous, if not a little queasy, if you're a 49er fan.
When we look at the games the Niners have lost, Cleveland, they established the ground game, if I'm correct. That was a way you control the clock, you gash them. And when you look at Baltimore, and I was alluding to this before the break, I think to beat the Niners, you have to have a dynamic, multi-dimensional quarterback right now. We saw Kyler Murray, his ability to scramble with his legs, buy time, get first downs, move the chains. Lamar Jackson is a better version of that. I think, if the Eagles face the Niners again, Jalen Hurts has to use his legs. I look at the Niners going up against, let's say, a Patrick Mahomes as well. Those are the kind of quarterbacks, and we're talking great quarterbacks, obviously, but those are the kind of quarterbacks I think that will give the Niners some trouble. Because I think the Niners now, their pass rush, when healthy, I mean, you got to be able to buy time against these guys because they'll eat you up.
They had missed tackles yesterday, too, and it's everybody this time of year. People are tired. And it's no excuse, but it happens. We'll see how they do against Lamar Jackson. The 49ers obviously thought they might have figured out a few things about slowing down a mobile quarterback when they played your team, but I don't know that Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson are they're mobile, but that doesn't mean they're the same type of mobile.
Yeah, totally different, right? Yeah. And the thing about Jalen Hurts, he's mobile, but Lamar Jackson has that big playability with his legs, too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's not scrambling to gain 3 or 5 yards. When he takes off, he's looking to gash you. And I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be great. What time is that game? 5, I think it's
That's a prime time
game. That's a prime time game, right?
Yeah. Christmas. Yeah.
I'm on a flight that night. That's why I'm asking.
Oh, really?
We fly out at 8 o'clock that night for Portland, so that'll be right in the fourth quarter or so, maybe. Yeah.
The NFL used to just say, all right, Christmas, that's yours, NBA. They don't do that
anymore. That's tough. That was a tradition in my household, too.
Sure.
Watching the NBA Christmas Day. Yeah. That was our thing growing up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think has been on commercials during the NFL season the most? Let's see here. Wall Street Journal, check this. And there's one guy in particular that I think we're all getting really sick of. What's your guess? What person, and this is a player, has been on commercials shown during NFL games?
Travis Kelce.
Travis Kelce is exactly right. through December 11th, Travis Kelce has appeared in commercials during NFL games, 375 times.
More than anybody else?
Yes. He beat Patrick Mahomes by 34. Coming in third at 247 was Kevin Miles. Do you know who that is? That's Jake from State Farm.
Oh.
And then fourth is Christian McCaffrey with 194. So what happened was Travis Kelce, all these spots were filmed before the Taylor Swift thing. But then when that became, public knowledge, a lot of the sponsors said,
we got to get more of that. Yeah.
More of our Kelce stuff. So he's been on TV a lot this season, more than anybody else. Good for him.
I mean, a smart move. You go with the hottest pop star out there. She's on fire. Everything she touches turns to gold.
He missed her birthday, though.
Yeah, but he has a job.
Yeah.
He has a job. Trust me. He'll make it up to her. She understands as well. She was out there in Foxborough yesterday watching. Did you see that video of her?
I didn't.
Where
I didn't.
He got should have been a pass interference, I think, in the end zone, and cameras pan to her, and it looked like she was saying the F word. She dropped the F bomb.
No.
Yes.
Taylor Swift.
Yes. Right.
Oh my.
As American as apple pie, Taylor Swift. Yeah, dropping the F bomb, man. Crazy.
Well, speaking of birthdays, we've got a guy coming on who is celebrating his birthday today.
Yeah, 50th birthday coming up. Yeah, today is his 50th birthday.
Kenyon Murray, Keegan's Pop joins us next. Drive Guys, Sactown Sports.